Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast. I'm Jeff, and recently my co-host Andrew and I got to cover the Austin Film Festival, where we interviewed a lot of great writers and directors and actors. During the festival, we uploaded shorter versions of all of these conversations, and now, over the next few weeks, we are going to be uploading the longer versions of all of these conversations we had during the Austin Film Festival. So stick around, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host Jeff, as always. Today, we have on screenwriter of the film, Midnight at the Paradise, Bill Robertson. He chats about his screenwriting process, the film, and much more, so stay tuned.
Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, and we are continuing our coverage of the Austin Film Festival, and one of the films screening at the festival is Midnight at the Paradise. It's a great movie. It's so well done, so well acted, and we are fortunate to have Bill Robertson, the writer of Midnight at the Paradise, on the show. So, Bill, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So tell the audience what Midnight at the Paradise is about, and where did you get this idea? Let's make it a two-parter. Tell us what the film's about, and then how did you get this idea?
Okay. The film is about three couples trying to figure out, navigate love, lust, deception, all over the course of one night, and also life and death as well. And it all centers around our feelings about the movies and how movies inform our decisions in life. And that's really where the idea came from. Me wanting to talk about all the movies that I love, but also the role that they played in my life and in the lives of people around me, in terms of particularly with respect to romantic notions that we get and that we grow up believing, being fueled by movies. So that the genesis of it came from wanting to do something about that. And the genesis also came from seeing Richard Linklater's trilogy, really, the Before trilogy.
Oh, interesting.
Starting with, obviously, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. And actually, I started percolating this idea after seeing the final film of that trilogy, which was Before Midnight. And sort of, if your listeners are probably aware, or maybe they're not, if they haven't seen that trilogy, they should see that. From the beginning, it's a series of three movies that follows a couple over 18 years. Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, as their relationship, as they meet again, once they are both in relationships, but available again, I guess, sort of. And then the final movie of that trilogy, which is about a marriage, two people who've, you know, come a long way together, but are navigating that time in our lives where, you know, there are children to deal with, there's aging to deal with. And I kind of had an idea about a movie that dealt with all that, but also dealt with a couple who maybe saw a movie early on that had an impact on their lives, and then met again years later at a screening of that same movie, and just how their lives had taken turns, but also how they, you know, how the movie or movies that they'd seen had impacted their views on romance and love, and the choices that they'd made.
Yeah, and I'm just going to the production side of things real quick. How did you connect with the director, Vanessa Matsui? And what was that collaboration like with her?
Midnight at the Paradise started about 7 years ago, again, after seeing Before Midnight and writing the script. And it actually started, I wrote the script for Leanne Balaban, who's the lead
actor. Oh, interesting. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she is somebody I'd worked with before in a couple of shorts. And I felt like And she'd also, you know, her big breakout film was New Waterford Girl, which was a Sundance, you know, indie hit about 20 years ago when she was, you know, still a teenager. And I always felt like she'd never had a meaty role since New Waterford Girl, and I wanted to write one for her. So Leanne is the genesis for, to answer your question about the director, Vanessa Matsui. Leanne is the one who introduced me to Vanessa. So when we were putting together the whole package, I was looking around going, okay, who, at one point I was going to direct the film, but also the lead character is a woman. She's a married 40-year-old woman stuck between raising a child and a marriage that's a little bit, she's not sure about, an ex-lover who's, she worries is the one that got away, and she's also dealing with aging parents. And Vanessa, again, through Leanne, came to be the perfect person to sort of navigate this lead character, a woman who's very much in sync with Vanessa. It's, as they like to say, Leanne Balaban and Vanessa Matsui are, you know, best friends. So that was actually the genesis for Vanessa coming on as the director.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And the cast overall is great. You've got Alan Hocco and as you said, Leanne Balaban and Kenneth Welsh. Were you, you know, once the movie started getting put together with the director and so forth, were you involved in any of the other casting choices, or how did that work?
Well, And not only I'm the writer and the producer of the film.
Oh, so, perfect. Yeah, I missed that. So, okay, that makes sense.
So I was, you know, I've been involved through the whole process. As I say, Leanne was the first on board. Vanessa, actually, the reason I met with Vanessa originally was she, Leanne suggested her as a potential for the second female lead. So she actually, I met her as an actor first, and then we kind of hit it off. And over the course of a couple of years, she and I just had coffee a few times and talked about the film and talked about her direction. She was doing a web series because she's an actor and she's a writer and a creator. And I respected that she was this triple threat as well. And just through the course of our conversations, she felt like she was aging out of the role that we were talking about, and she was looking to direct more. So it kind of evolved in that direction. And then the rest of the cast, Vanessa and I, we did the casting together. So the roles of Alan Hocco and Kenneth Welch, who people might know from Twin Peaks or from, you know, he's been in a lot of, he did a lot of Broadway and a lot of smaller roles in big movies like The Aviator and what are some of his other movies? Independence Day, things like that. But they all sort of came on board organically in the course of Vanessa and I working with the casting directors to find these. It's three couples, it's six actors. And yeah, it was a pretty organic process once Vanessa came on board.
Staying on the topic of producing, you also produced the breakout Toronto indie band, The Neighborhood Watch, whose music and performance are featured in Midnight at the Paradise. Can you tell us about that? You're a music producer and a writer. How important was it for you to mesh those kind of two worlds of yours together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I honestly feel like music and film, for me anyway, music is such a crucial component to making films work. So I'm a big believer that you have some sort of you know, a soundtrack as you develop your material. And the fact is, I don't know if you know this, but The Neighborhood Watch, I did produce them literally, and my son is in the band. So,
That made the negotiations easier, I'm sure.
Well, not always. And you might be aware, or people when they see the Midnight at the Paradise will see, you know, Alan Hawko, the lead male. He was a singer in a band. He's, you know, trying to navigate post that era of his life and figuring out who he is. And he's scouting a young band. There's a song at the center of the movie, which is the When Limbs Die song, which is not written by the Neighborhood Watch, but is actually written by a friend of my son's. He wrote it when he was 15, and I was like, that's a really good song.
Wow.
and I was like, I'm gonna, you know, what do I'm gonna put it in a movie. I'm gonna do it. And he was like, okay. So really, the music came about organically just from the people around me. And then with the Neighborhood Watch, they were just graduating high school. And I said, you guys are pretty good. Let's just go into the studio for a day. And in 6.5 hours, we recorded their first album. I just kept pushing them through songs. And that album now has like 15 million streams on Spotify and
wow.
Elsewhere. And it was just one of those, I caught them on the right day, and they've since, they're working on their fourth album now. You know, they've gotten several, they're moving several steps ahead, but yeah, I use that music to shape this soundtrack of the film, their performances in the film, and it's, as I say, it was even integral to the editing process, their music, in terms of the rhythm of the final film.
And since you were using music with a band that you're obviously very familiar with, did you do a pass on the script thinking about which songs you were going to use, or was that all done in post?
Well, that's the thing. We did have to do it in pre-production, because they do perform in the movie. So Vanessa and I sat down and, you know, listened to their, you know, body of work and said, what about this one for this scene? And the interesting thing too was they actually had a song called Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Which, you know, people might know, you know, it is obviously a famous film, and a Robert Benton film. And I also used Breathless, the 1960 film Breathless, in the film as the film that unites these two ex-lovers from when they were young to now. And people may or may not know, but, you know, the film Bonnie and Clyde is, you know, considered to be the American version of Breathless. So Bonnie and Clyde seemed to be the perfect song for the middle of the film, for a performance, for this specific story. So yeah, Vanessa and I went through all the songs and, as I said, picked the ones that fit the rhythm of the moment, for the scenes that we knew we needed for the film.
Well, you know, let's switch over to, you know, the writing process. I'm curious about something. You know, Midnight at the Paradise is such a character story. There are a lot of really deep relationships in the film. But at the same time, you know, as a writer, you have to keep the story moving. You have to hit your plot points. I'm curious, how did you balance trying to tell the story from a plot standpoint and still develop all that intimate character relationship, because it balances really well. I mean, you're at least I was totally invested in these characters and what was going to happen to them. So how did you navigate that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think I did set out intentionally to write a six-hander. I felt like six-hander can feel filmic, but it's still contained enough that you can sort of control the story. So it is the story of three couples. One, you know, like I say, the central character is in a sort of a middle relationship, marriage, not sure about. There's a younger couple that's, you know, in the throes of sex and lust and about to get married. And then there's an older couple, the parents of our lead, who are divorced, who are cantankerous, who, you know, are dealing with, you know, end of life issues. So in some ways it was intentional to look at love and relationships from three very different perspectives. But you're right, then it becomes, how do we balance all of these elements and make it work? And I have to hand it to Vanessa as the director. Because of her acting background, she was able to get these terrific performances out of our six leads. And also these, our six leads were just phenomenally invested in these characters. They felt passionately about the struggles they were all going through. And I think when you have a cast as uniformly strong as that, it helps to balance your story for sure.
And when it comes to that balance, I'm curious, with the writing process, did you do specific passes on the script just on one character to make sure you had that arced for that single character, or was it more of always including all of them together and seeing the dynamic as a whole?
Well, for sure, you definitely, I definitely go through the script, you know, many times, one at a time, and really look at the arcs of each character and make sure that they're hitting enough of their beats, right? I mean, I think it is always a challenge, no matter what kind of story you're telling. For me, I consider myself a writer who directs, you know, so I have both skills, but I'm more of a writer. It just is important to keep your story moving, but as I say, make sure every beat is earned as well. I think a lot of it too is at the starting point. You know, as I said, I wanted a six-hander, but you're trying as a creator to figure out, okay, what six characters do I need to make this story work? You know, what dynamic between them all, like who's the good guy, who's the not so good guy in the story? I chose specifically the elder couple, the man Kenneth Welsh plays. I made him a film critic because I wanted to showcase again films and the role they play in our lives. And he's a dying film critic, and it also played to the whole notion that we all, you know, have been grappling with for the last few years, especially since the pandemic, of, you know, what is a film? You know, people aren't going to them the way they used to, the way we used to revere film and go every, you know, every week to the cinema. So, you know, you make those choices. It kind of fit that he's a dying film critic. He's dying. You know, what can we say about film and storytelling with that specific character? So it's really about looking at each character and making sure they, you know, complement each other for the story you're trying to tell.
No, definitely. And, you know, as a writer who directs as well, I've known a lot of people who are, you know, wear similar hats as you. Once they cast their film, they may go back to the script and rewrite some of it based off, you know, who they cast. Maybe you get new ideas once you see the dynamic on screen, or just, you know, in your head with the people who are going to be playing the characters. Did you do any of that, or did the script relatively stay solid even during the casting process?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the script, interestingly enough, stayed pretty true to its bones. Even over the course of 7 years of rewrites, But you're totally right. Once you hear the words out loud and you see who you've cast, you know, they make suggestions and they do certainly give ideas. I know there were a couple of moments added to the film that are people's, you know, some people's favorite moments of the film that they're not in the script, but
oh, interesting.
They came about through the process of, I firmly believe a script is not done until the day you shoot it. And even then it's not done because the edit suite changes things as well. So I'm all for, you see a good idea, or somebody, anybody can have a good idea on set, anybody in the crew or the cast. So be open to it. It's a very, I think, an important thing to remember for any filmmakers. You certainly go in with a plan, you go in with a script, you go in with a shot list, you know, you have your plan. But if you see some magic that's not on, you know, the schedule, you grab it for sure. And there were definitely moments of that with this great cast and with Vanessa leading them.
Well, that's the beauty of collaboration, and also, you know, the beauty of choosing the right person for the role, whether it's in front of the camera or behind the camera, because like you said, there's some magic that happens when all those people are in the same room. Something new can come about. I want to circle back to another screenwriting question, because as I said, I really liked your film. I thought the emotional tension was really interesting, and so I'm kind of fascinated how you tackle that. So, you know, typically the mantra for screenwriting is show, don't tell, you know. And in your film, there's a lot of emotional tension between the characters. As I said, it's really well done. And emotional tension is tricky. You know, it's about the look in someone's eyes, or it's about, you know, the dynamic of the scene and what the audience thinks they might be thinking, even though they, you know, the characters might be just expressing themselves with what's between the lines that they're saying. And I would think that that's a tough thing to create on the page. And so I'm wondering, did you have a process for building that tension? Like an active process as opposed to it just being, you know, intuitive. I'm curious how you establish that. If that question even makes sense.
Well, I guess I'm curious, like, what would you consider an active process?
I guess what I meant was, you know, you write the scene and you write the lines and you write the, you know, the action that's happening between the characters, and then the actors have to take that and create that moment. And in your case, because it was such an emotional film, when I say active process, were you purposefully looking at the script and saying, okay, I can bring the tension out more if I have this happen, this external thing happen to them during the scene, or if I give them this bit of business that they can do in the scene to make them feel more uncomfortable with each other, or more, you know, trying to rekindle something that was in the past? I don't know if I'm asking a specific enough question, but I'm trying to figure out how you tackled the you know, just that emotional tension on the page, so that the actors would go, oh, I understand this, I can do this.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because it is. It's hard to know where intuition stops and where, you know, craft, you know, plays a role. And honestly, if you think about it too much, it just bogs you down in the writing.
Yeah.
But you definitely need to think about it. I think the way I approach it really is, I mean, obviously there's some intuition, but like I say, there was definitely a long period of figuring out, who are these characters and how, you know, who do I need to relate to whom and how, you know, does she love Iris, the lead character, who's, you know, got a young child and a dying father? Like, how does she feel about her father? Why does she, because he's a bit of a prick. He's pretty full of himself. And, you know, honestly, when I was originally writing, I thought she really resented him. But then I realized, I don't think she does. So there is an element of that. It's like, what will help me get where I want to go with a scene? And there's definitely, in my writing process, there is an element of jumping around of, I don't know what happens here, but I know what happens a little bit later. So I'm going to write that and then come back and fill in the gaps, which I think is a way of looking at it. I do think like you are looking for the tension in every scene, right? And asking yourself the questions, the key questions, like who wants what from whom in the scene? What's the problem here? And you can't just look at it for the whole film. You have to look at it, scene by scene, story by story. But yeah, I don't know if that helps, but I think there is an element in this film of, because there were three couples, I could follow the tension of each couple quite, it was helpful to do that too, to do that kind of breakdown of it. And as opposed to just linearly going through the whole script.
Now that makes sense.
Figure it out.
Yeah, and maybe transitioning to more of a general screenwriting question. There are a lot of seasoned writers that come to the Austin Film Festival, but also a lot of young writers maybe looking to start their careers. I'm curious what advice you would give to them on the craft of screenwriting.
I also do a lot of teaching on the side. So I teach at York University in Toronto. So I do give a lot of advice. but honestly, that's the thing. My whole thing is, each writer is unique, and that is one thing that I really stress to anybody I talk to about writing, is there is no one way of doing this. And I mean, I'm not the first person to say that, but that was my experience when I was a fledgling writer, was, people would tell you there is this one way to do it. You follow Sid Field's rules and you will get there. And I don't mean to pick on Sid Field, but he didn't work for me. So, but I fully acknowledge he works for some people, and I would never, like I say, I don't mean to pick on him. My thing is usually find somebody out there whose advice you relate to, and it could be, or it could be, one person says something about dialogue that you relate to, one person says something about structure. You can get your inspiration and your craft from many, many different sources. And sometimes maybe that feels like a cop-out, but I honestly think that's the best approach, is just be open to everybody's not everybody, but anybody who's developed a craft, a writing craft, generally I find has something interesting to offer to, young writers. And you have to decide which part to take from which advisor.
Well, let me ask you this. I always ask this because I became fascinated with storytelling and filmmaking when I was really young. Was there a defining moment in your life where you knew you had to be a writer and a storyteller?
That's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. I'd have to think about that.
Well, let me ask you this then. Was when did you segue into writing as a profession?
Well, that's, I would say the truth is I tried everything else but writing in university, and I really wasn't, I wasn't finding what I was told I should be a doctor, or I should be, well, really it was a doctor. You were supposed to be a doctor in my not being able to get through organic chemistry. I just couldn't do it. And I think in university, I think it was second year or third year university, I just started writing a script. So I just, was not happy in any of my courses. And so I wrote a feature script and it never got made, but it actually got me into grad film school at York. So I did not do an undergraduate degree in film. I did a master's degree in film, in screenwriting. And so I think it was one of those things that I always knew I liked to make and, and do creative things, but was told that wasn't really what, a sound professional choice. So for all creative people, I think there is that element of, the familial pressures, and what is expected of you, and then you just rebel against them at some point. And I think there is a definitely anybody who becomes a writer, there's, a compulsion to just share, wanting to share things about the human experience and the human condition, which, some people are just more compelled to do than others. And I certainly fall into that category.
And that indeed is the power of storytelling for sure. Well, big congratulations on the film, and we sure appreciate your time to talk about storytelling and screenwriting. So thanks again for your time, and break a leg at the Austin Film Festival, and we look forward to seeing what you're up to next.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Andrew, and look forward to seeing you this coming week in Austin.
And to end the show, Bill has graciously let us play you all the song AA from the Neighborhood Watch. You can find them on Spotify and also in his new film, Midnight at the Paradise.
The future burns slow like a cigarette to my lungs, and when I go home, all the emptiness fills me up. I don't know much.
thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on, and stay tuned for future episodes.